Tandem Nomads, episode 17.
With experience and time, all that came. I mean, it didn't come from my first time when I moved. But the thing is that I really, really value about expatriation is the family bond. Friends become family in expatriation and the relationship with the partner. Because we're here alone, don't have any family support, any members of our family with us. We discuss all things together. We share things together. We are with our kids. He supports me. I support him. So I think the relationship becomes very strong when you are with your partner on an expatriation.
Welcome to Tandem Nomads, where inspiring expat partners from around the world share with you how they turn the challenges of relocation into great opportunities. So are you following your partner abroad for his or her career? Then Tandem Nomads is the place for you. Go to tandemnomads.com and sign up for the newsletter. Hello, Nomad Nation. This is Emel Deregi, and I'm very, very excited today to bring you our special guest, Lynn Abdeljaber. Lynn, are you ready for the ride?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. So Lynn comes from Jordan. She also lived in France, in Egypt, and today she lives in Algeria with her husband and three boys. While traveling from a country to another with her family for her jobs, for her husband's job, Lynn spent the last decade as the founder and executive director of an NGO called INJAZ, mobilizing the private sector and ministries of education in Jordan, Egypt, and Algeria to join forces in creating a new generation of business-minded youth who will become entrepreneurs and employees of choice for corporations. For instance, in the past 5 years, Lynn's efforts in Algeria led to reaching more than 6,000 young Algerians across 9 cities and 20 universities, and also making more than 22 Algerian private companies participate to the board of INJAZ and commit to empowering the youth in Algeria. So INJAZ, this is absolutely amazing what you've done here. Can you tell us more about INJAZ before we get to know more about your personal story?
We are the MENA region part, and it's called INJAZ Al-Arab. It's for the MENA countries, and we are in 14 countries in the MENA region, in Morocco, Tunis, UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, Jordan, Palestine, Yemen, Oman, and Egypt. What is our objective? Well, the objective is to change the mindsets or to work on developing the soft skills of the youth to better prepare them for the labor market, either by going and applying to companies or by starting their own small enterprise. And basically, we focus on three main pillars, that is entrepreneurship, workforce readiness, and financial literacy. I have been working with INJAZ for the past 15 years. I first started back in 2000 in Jordan, worked there for 7 years, and then stopped for a couple of years when I moved to live in Paris. Mm-hmm. And then when I lived in Egypt, I joined INJAZ Egypt. And when I came here back in 2010, I've started INJAZ Aljazair. INJAZ Algeria in specific, I've started it 5 years ago when I first came to Algeria. I came to Algeria not knowing much about the country, and I was given only a laptop and some money to start the project. I started from there.
Wow, this is really amazing.
So development, actually, both economic and social development, has been my passion. To me, making a difference in the lives of youth, what keeps me going. Every day I come back home after a full day of work, and I feel, wow, I've made a difference. I've impacted youth, maybe one person today or yesterday. So it really keeps me going. And INJAZ, to me, has been almost all my career experience have been in INJAZ. So I feel, you know, gives me self-satisfaction to see that there has been an impact.
Yeah, this is absolutely amazing. So tell us about your journey with your husband and your family. You have three boys. So how did you meet with your husband and end up traveling with him?
He was a volunteer in INJAZ program.
I see.
So we met in Jordan at one of our event. I was facilitating the meeting back then. It worked from there and we got married. He worked in Lafarge, a cement company, and he was listed as one of the high potentials in the company to be expatriated one day to the headquarters in Paris. Okay. So I knew before getting married to him that one day we will be moving to Paris.
Okay, so was it easy for you, or how did it go, this agreement of... And the decision you made?
It was a two-edged sword because I was doing great in my career back then in Jazz Jordan. I was the deputy director, so I have reached a very high level. All my achievements, you know, I was at the top of the hierarchy. Leaving my job was a great sacrifice for me. But then again, I had just had my first baby, and I wanted some time with him. And what a better place to spend time with your child and your husband in Paris.
Beautiful.
So, yes, the decision was somehow easy for me for our first expatriation. Although I had let go of my career and my salary or my income, but at the same time, it was some time out, a break, say, from my work life and to spend some time with my baby and my husband.
And how many years was it in Paris?
2 years and a half.
Okay, and then you moved to Egypt, right?
Yeah, I moved to Egypt. I've utilized my time while in Paris. I've learned French. So basically, it was a win situation that helped me without knowing in my future, because now in Algeria, we speak French.
Yeah.
It was a good opportunity. I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to look at it this way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
When we moved to Egypt, I had informed in Jazz Arab that I'll be going to Egypt. Mm-hmm. So back then, I had an interview with the director of InJazz Egypt, and she was like, "Lynn, but we can't afford you for a full-time job." And I was like, "What? How come?" You know, being away from the market made me feel, oh, am I worth that much for her saying that we can't afford you? So I had forgot what are my talents, what's my worth in the market. Mm-hmm. So, and then I'm like, no, I'm ready to join. I was about to tell her I'm ready to join with any, you know, with the salary that you have, with the budget that you have. So then we found a middle point of me joining for 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. I was a consultant with them for 3 days, which was perfect for me. And then I got pregnant with my twins. Okay. Back then. So it worked very well with me.
It was a great compromise, I guess.
Yeah. I was working and I was taking care of my three boys. And, you know, the twins were, you know, it's a great big job.
For sure.
To raise twins. So we only stayed there, however, for a year and a half. And then my husband was like, oh, how do you like Egypt? I love it. I want to be here. I want to stay here. And then he's like, well, we're going to move. We're going to go to Algeria.
Wow. How did you react to that?
I'm like, no, I don't want to move. I'm so happy here. I have my friends. I have my job. My kids are happy. So then we came on a trip. And I wasn't very convinced. I'm like, you know, I will not be having work here. I will be, there isn't much to do. I don't know people here. So I was like kind of hesitant at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then what made you really be comfortable with the decision?
Actually, we met a lady, she's Algerian, and she took me through Algeria in a different, I mean, she walked me through Algeria, through the history. We went to places, we went to the center, she talked about the history. She made it easier for me to make the decision. She took us to the French school, she showed me the places where I can get things. She changed my mind.
Wow.
She made it easier for me to take that decision.
She made a great action, this lady.
exactly. And then just about that time, I had met InJazz Arab, and she, InJazz Arab regional director, and she was like, "Lynn, we don't have InJazz in Algeria. Why don't you start it?" So I was like, yeah, why not? So I came as an expat here, but with work. So
So as soon as you arrived, you already had a project to start with.
Yeah. So it made it easier for me to come here because I had a guaranteed job, if you want to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talking of that, you said something very interesting a bit earlier, how you were shocked suddenly that the person who was in charge of InJazz in Egypt was telling you, we can't afford you. And you said, you know, I forgot my value on the market. Isn't that interesting?
When she told me we cannot afford you, I'm like, oh, 2 years and a half made me forget, you know, my skills, my value as a working woman.
Yeah, isn't that, it's an issue that a lot of expat partners mention to me, is this like dilemma between one side keeping confident, believing in ourselves as expat partner, believing in what we've been achieving so far, and on the other side, being ready to take anything because we know that opportunities are not that many as an expat partner because we are short-term value for the companies that they're not sure how long they can keep us. So I don't know if you have any advice for expat partners who are in this situation who they know that they are worth a lot in the market, but at the same time lose confidence and are ready to take any kind of job to be able to continue being active.
I think any expat lady should, if she has certain skills or certain projects, I mean, that she wants to, even though if it's on a short term, I think she should make use of her time and also to make something useful out of it. I mean, I see my other expat friends, they were like getting into coffees, endless coffees, mornings, and, you know, getting together. But now they are more like, we are bored. We want to start something, even a simple thing. So they've started a workshop, doing things and selling them and coming with different designs. And they had recently a Christmas bazaar where they sold everything made from their, you know, their own hands. And they made so much money. I mean, this is a simple project, but they earned money and they were busy and they made something useful out of their time here.
So basically you're saying that for those who are in this situation should be focused on what they can learn where they are and how they can just at least continue being active. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah, I highly recommend that each expat woman should make use of her time in the country. See where are her strong skills, if she can help. I mean, I have my French teacher. She's an expat lady, and she comes and teaches me twice a week French.
Mm-hmm.
She earns, I mean, she doesn't earn that much, but she earns an income, and she has managed to do some side work also, teaching some kids. So basically, she's using her strong points. She's French. She has some teaching skills. So basically, use your skills in keeping your time busy.
And I guess it's also important to spend time really knowing what we're good at. Because a lot of, with time, we get to forget our skills, and you mentioned it yourself. And it's very important to always work on our self-confidence and really analyze as much as we can what we're able to. Sometimes it's not that obvious, but we might have some hidden skills that we never heard about.
Absolutely. Yeah. For example, after a while, when I was in Paris, there was a club for the expat women. I was responsible for their newsletter. So, you know, I knew I'm good in reporting and report writing. And although it was voluntary, it wasn't paid, but I was making use of, you know, updating that newsletter, making use of my time in a fruitful way. When I first came here, I asked, well, what's available for expats? The same thing happened in France, and the same thing happened in Egypt. So when I came here in Algeria, they said there are two organizations. There is an organization for French-speaking women. It's called Alger AK. And there is an organization called Alger Today for English-speaking women. Mm-hmm. I joined them, and I still do. I mean, I've been here 5 years in Algeria, and I still go to the events that Alger AK holds. They do lots of activities for expat women, cooking classes, dancing classes, and for children as well, gymnastic, football, and they do some dinners for expats. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Let's go back to your tandem. Actually, how do you support each other when you decide to move from a place to another? You've been moving three times so far. So yeah. What's the process? How does it work in the tandem to support each other in this transition time?
Yes. The biggest part at the beginning is my husband coming in and telling me, informing me of the new move.
Hey, honey, this is where you're going.
No, he actually manages to do it in a very slow, transitional way that kind of like leaves me no choice but to say yes. So he actually first comes up to me and says, "So, Lynn, how do you like it here? What do you like most about this country?" And then he proposes the second country. "So what do you think of moving to Egypt? Or what do you think of moving to Algeria?" And I'm like, what? You know, my first reaction would be, what? But after then, so we're used to taking decisions together. We visit the place before deciding, making the last decision. We check out houses. We see where our children would go. We think of our children as well. You know, are they going to like the place? There is school that fits the standard that they are used to. When are we going to move in terms of me leaving my job or leaving my... So the timing, we set it with the timing. And usually it's by the end of the school year so that we make a new start, a new school. We never move at the end of, I mean, in the middle of the term.
Yeah.
For example, in Egypt, I wanted to stay until June, till the end of the school year. I didn't want to disturb my child halfway through. So I spent 3 months on my own. And my husband had already moved to Algeria. And then we kick it off from there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. I love the fact that you said how much time you spent in preparing in advance and that you even go to the country before you move there to get to know the country so you prepared psychologically to what you have to expect it. And I think that's really an important advice here.
I can tell you that in each of my three expatriations, that the first 6 months are the toughest.
Yeah, why is it? Can you explain us?
You don't know anyone in the place, in the country you're moving. You don't know anyone, you don't know where to get things, you haven't made friends. So basically, you're there on your own with your husband. I remember the first 2 months I was telling my husband, I don't think so last year. I don't think so. The challenge they gave me to start this new NGO, I don't think so, I'm up to it. I don't know anyone, I don't speak their language, I don't understand their mindsets. So basically he was like, "No, Lynn, I think you have to be patient. I think you need this first 6 months in order to fit in." I was very down. I was very demotivated. I thought back then we made a mistake by this.
Oh, you really thought
yeah.
that?
And yes.
Is there
yes.
a special event that happened or something particular that made you feel that way? Like depressed and think, okay, this was a bad choice?
I remember it was we were celebrating Eid. That was a celebration for Muslims. And here in Algeria, it's a family celebration. Mm-hmm. And we were alone and we had just moved and everything was closed. Everything is closed here around the celebration. Even the bakery closes. And I wasn't aware of that. The butcher closed. The supermarket closed. We couldn't go out to any restaurant and we were off. And this is where I felt, oh my God, you know, I'm on my own with my husband and my kids. So I was very down.
Wow. Yeah. It's quite amazing how small events like this, because Eid is like 2 days or maximum 4 days.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing how small events can really, really hit us very hard emotionally. And I think it's just like a symptom of something much bigger, a fear of what's coming next, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, because I wasn't familiar, but now, you know, after experience, I go shop, I buy my meat and my grocery prior to the Eid. I plan something with my friends, and if not, we travel somewhere close. I try not to stay with my family here. We go because Amman is so far, Jordan is so far away that I cannot manage to go for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
So now I do some planning ahead of time.
Very interesting.
With experience and time, all that came. I mean, it didn't come from my first time when I moved. But the thing is that I really, really value about expatriation is the family bond and the relationship with the partner. I feel that if we stayed back home, we would have not had a very strong relationship, myself and my husband. Because we're here alone, don't have any family support, any members of our family with us. We discuss all things together, we share things together, we are with our kids. He supports me, I support him. So I think the relationship becomes very strong when you are with your partner on an expatriation.
That's a beautiful advantage. I believe that too. That because yeah, we become like a small clan. You know, we yes, rely exactly. on each other, so we get a bit closer and more tight, I guess.
Yes, definitely.
Tell us about. I'm a bit curious. You know, Jordan is an Arab country, Algeria too. But as maybe not everybody knows, every Arab country has its own culture. It's not because the classical language is shared that the culture is shared. So, did you have any kind of culture shock when you went to Algeria or Egypt?
Yes, actually, you're absolutely right. Every country has its specifics, and in the Middle East is different than North Africa. I mean, I come from the Middle East. For me to fit in into North Africa was different. The mindset is different. The culture is different. The way they do things and is quite different than the way we do things. I remember an incident where when I first came here and I was the first day my husband sent me a driver to take me around to get some grocery shopping and stuff. And he was shouting at me. And I was like, I called my husband. I was like, I don't want this driver. I don't like him. He shouts at me. Then my husband told the driver, "What's wrong with you?" You know. And then the driver said to me, "Madam, I'm sorry, but this is the way we talk. We're loud." Very loud. I don't mean to shout at you or anything, but this is the way we talk.
So true.
Yeah. So I'm like, I was shocked, you know. This was like shocking to me.
My husband reacted the same way. I'm like a Nomad Nation, you might know. I'm Algerian myself. So when I talked to my family on the phone, the first months of our marriage, he was like, "What's happening? Are you guys okay?" I said, "What are you talking about? Why are you fighting on the phone?" I said, "We're not fighting. We're actually very happy to talk to each other." Exactly. So the happier, the louder.
Yeah, exactly. But with a very, very high voices. And so basically that was a shock to me. I'm like, what's wrong with this driver? So in every country I've moved to, there are some advantages and disadvantages. Mm-hmm. But I look at it this way. I've learned three different cultures. I have full expats, friends that I've met from different countries. I think my Facebook wouldn't be as rich as it is today if I haven't done those expatriation. People know you when you're an expat, make friends with you for who you are.
Yeah.
Not where how much you're worth or who's your family, or they really make friends. You have nothing to show them, you know. They make friends for your personality, for your and this is what I value in expatriation. I really like making friends, getting to know the culture. Mm-hmm. I think my kids are very well rounded, and they speak different languages. So this
which
is
languages?
An aspect. They speak Arabic, English, and French.
Wow. Okay.
So they would have not spoken French if we were back home. So this is an added value in expatriation.
Yes, so many values, definitely. It's not an easy ride, but it's definitely a great rewarding.
Absolutely. And I don't feel an expat back home, to be honest with you.
Oh, that's interesting.
I've been away for 10 years, away from home. I feel when I go, I'm going momentarily. It's not, I'm missing out on all of those things. I always feel home is the place I am staying in right now.
That's a good point, yeah. And when you go back to Jordan, you don't feel home per se?
No.
Because you're not living there.
No, I'm not living there. I don't feel it's home.
It's interesting.
That's why when I say I can't wait to go home, and home is to me is Algeria right now.
Oh, wow. And how long, do you know how long you will be staying there?
Maybe another 2 years.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. You managed to adapt very quickly and build a life for yourself and for your family and find a balance, which is great for such a different country from that's not expected, I guess.
Definitely. I mean, I don't say that, I mean, expatriation is a good thing, but there are some times where I feel down. I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, I miss my family. I miss my mom. Sometimes I miss some little small things, having a cup of tea with my grandmother.
Hmm.
You know, I miss those little things, having an endless chat over coffee with my sister. You know, I miss those little things about being home, family support. You know, I can, when I go back home, I'm like, Mom, take the kids. And she's like, okay, yeah, why not? Here, I'm on my own. I'm a working woman. I don't have any family support.
How do you manage, actually, between work and family? How do you manage to do it?
I'm multitasked. I drop my kids to school. I go do quickly my grocery shopping and get my vegetables and fruits and then go to work. I'm the first one at work, do like an hour of like really emails and stuff, and then all the staff comes in, do the things with the staff, go manage sometimes. I try my best to pick up my kids from school. They finish at 4 o'clock. I go pick them up, you know, prepare dinner. It's crazy. It's mm-hmm. crazy. By the time I get to bed, I sleep in 1 second. I mean,
oh my God.
I'm burnt out.
It must be really exhausting. And you have also some trips to do around the country and out of the country. And,
yes,
and,
exactly.
And how?
I have a nanny that helps me.
Okay.
I think with that, I wouldn't have been able to manage. I also have, I've managed to make good friends. I mean, I consider them like family.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm traveling, I talk to my friends, please take care of my children. You know, they come in or they get them there to have lunch there. So, yeah, friends become family in expatriation.
Exactly. That's a very good point, definitely, because everybody's lonely and alone and needs help. And it's a community per se.
Yeah, it's a community.
Yeah. How about your husband? Does he have any role in this, in supporting you with the kids and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. He takes care of them while I'm away. If I have last week, for example, I had a conference in Oman, in Muscat. And, you know, I'm hearing him the other on the phone saying, Lean, we're out of water, Lean, you know. So it was a tough job for him, managing between work. But he helps me a lot. He helps me a lot with the kids. Without his support, I mean, I would have been able to work.
Yeah.
He's very supportive, very patient, and he helps me with you know, things to do around the house.
That's important, yeah.
That's important, to have the husband's support as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know, one thing that happens a lot when we travel from a country to another is that we have to adjust our habits and routines. Do you have like a habit or a routine that you manage to keep all the way?
Organization, actually. I'm very organized. That's planning and organization, because I don't say it's a habit, as say, but I mean, it's a skill that I have. I like to be very organized because this is the only way that I'll be able to have, I mean, to provide my kids and my family and my partner a good life.
Mm-hmm.
Is to be very organized and to plan things. I managed to have a printed out on a monthly basis calendar of events, of play dates, of a calendar of what's happening at home.
Wow. Okay.
So I have it on the fridge where we know that, you know, my eldest has gymnastics, a schedule of the dinners that we're having, events we're having at home.
That's a great tip, you know, to start putting the calendar on the fridge so that everybody knows what's happening, because sometimes we're so busy that we forget to communicate all the information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes my husband, I forgot to tell you, I'm invited to dinner tonight. I'm like, whoa, you didn't tell me. He said, no, I told you. And I said, absolutely, you didn't tell me. So, yeah, it creates some miscommunication.
So you're basically the manager there, right?
Yeah.
Of operations.
Yeah, manager. Yes, absolutely.
Before we start our spinning round, I would like to ask you some advice on your experience in the NGO world. Is there any practical advice you can give to our Nomad Nation in how you can develop and expand an NGO, find funding? Is there any tips you can give us in that way?
The most issue that is challenging in an NGO is sustainability. For you to get money, you have to sustain yourself. You have to sustain the NGO. And for an NGO to sustain itself, you have to get always, continuously get the interest of the partners by showing them success stories, testimonials, getting them to show them where their value of money is going. Mm-hmm. And what I do, usually, I always, whenever a training took place, I visit the partner or the company that's supporting me, and I show them the success stories and what they have managed through their funds that they gave, what you know, we've changed lives, you guys changed lives. Mm-hmm. This guy is going to do a master's, this guy got a job opportunity, this guy started his own or her own business. So basically you have to show them the impact of what you have been doing.
Yeah. In order to keep them engaged, definitely.
Yes, yes, exactly. In order to keep them engaged and in order to see to keep the NGO sustainable.
Oh, okay. That's a great advice. And how did you start it all? Because honestly, if you arrive in a country, you know nobody, and you're in charge of launching such an important branch of a big NGO like INJAZ, where did you start? I mean, you've got to have some good contacts to start with.
I had zero contacts.
How did you do it?
I had zero contacts. It was absolutely a matter of luck. I had zero contacts. I didn't speak the language. I didn't know anyone from the private sector. I didn't have access to youth. And then there was the World Economic Forum in Marrakesh, and I had a list of the Algerian businessmen attending. Mm-hmm. And I managed to send an email to a businessman who is very well known in Algeria. 10 minutes later, I got back a response from him saying, I'll meet you. So we met and I presented the idea. He really liked it. Mm-hmm. We came back and he hooked me up with all the private sector in Algeria, hooked me up with the institutions, ministries. So it was just a matter of meeting the right person.
Wow. Uh-huh. I don't think it's only luck. You took the action to also inform yourself on the conferences and look at the list. It's not just luck. You did something proactively to find those contacts.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't. I met by luck by the fact that this businessman responded to me directly.
Well, that was great advice. Thank you. And before we say goodbye, we're going to start with a spinning round. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Right. So what are your plans for the coming 2 years?
I'm planning to strengthen my NGO before leaving. I always tell my husband before when he suggested that we would leave, I was like, no, my baby is still, you know, I have a fourth baby, my NGO. I'm not ready yet. So basically, I want to be ready for when he says, let's go, I'm ready to leave.
Oh, that's so intelligent, yeah. So you're preparing the ground somehow.
Yes, I've put, and my board have put a lot of hard work in the past 5 years. So I don't want to go and leave it not in good hands. Mm-hmm. So basically what I'm doing, I'm strengthening the foundation. I'm doing the inside work. I mean, preparing the organization to be self-sustainable. I mean, everyone is replaceable, but I just feel... I want to create that ground, a strong ground.
It's very important, yeah.
For it to succeed and sustain itself in the long run, yes.
Okay, great. Is there any book you recommend for Tandem Nomads?
Yes, I read recently a book called Strengths Finder by Tom Raff. It's a very interesting book. You know, we always used to say, let's focus on our weaknesses and try to make, you know, work on our weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And this book tells you the other way around. Focus on your strengths. And this book, it has an online test and assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Where you discover your strengths, and it helps you discover and develop your natural talents.
Oh, that's a really good recommendation, Aline. Because
yeah.
We were talking just before the beginning of this interview about the importance of knowing our skills as expat partners to be able to build our path and on a professional level. And I guess this book will be very useful.
Yeah, yeah. It's written by Tom Rath,
mm-hmm.
R-A-T-H. Yeah, and it's a very interesting book. I mean, I enjoyed reading it, and I did the assessment actually, and that assessment really helped me in finding out my strengths that I wasn't aware of.
Wow. Like
yeah.
What, for example?
Like, of course, I was aware of my organizational skills, lobbying, thinking strategically. I was useful.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for that recommendation. And before we say goodbye, can you tell us what's the best way to reach you or know more about you? And in jazz also too.
Yeah. Our Facebook is In Jazz in Jazair. And our website is www.injazz/dz.org. My email is Leen, L-E-E-N, at injazz, I-N-J-R-Z. /aradia.org.
Okay, fantastic. Nomad Nation, I will put all this information in the show notes page of this episode, which is on the website of Tandem Nomads, linked to the page of this episode. So, Lynn, thank you so much. You've been amazing. You've shared so many great inspiration here.
Oh, thank you, Amal. Thank you, Amal.
Nomad Nation, don't miss any of the great inspiration, tips, and insights that will prepare just for you. Go to tandemnomads.com and sign up for the newsletter.